the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Charlie McCarron.
I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
And this is our third episode in the series on numerical coordination games, a term we came up with. And we found three games that all use cards, numbers, and we're trying to get them in sequence cooperatively. So we are going to be talking about Hanabi.
Hanabi!
Which is Japanese for fireworks. And in this game, you have a hand of cards that you hold outward towards the other players. And you'll have three cards in three-player game, four cards in four-player game, that kind of thing. And the cards are in five different suits of different colors and numbered 1 through 5. And what you're trying to do is play them from your hand without 100% knowing what the cards might be. But the other players can give you clues. And you need to work up from 1 to 5 in that order for each of the colors. And so if I have ones in my hand, you want to give me a clue right away so that I'll play those ones to start those different piles. But here's the trick. If I play a 1 blue... and Trevor has a 1 blue, and he plays that 1 blue. That is illegal. So we would...
Failure.
Yeah, we have basically 3 lives. So you have to know when to discard the cards in your hand or play them. And say... So the way this works on giving clues is really what makes it fun. So I'm looking at someone's hand, and I have to give them a clue either of the colors of cards in their hand or the number in their hand. So you have to point to all the cards. Say I need to give a clue that Trevor has three in his hand, but I have to point to all threes. Mm-hmm. So maybe I say you have 2 threes and I point to both those cards. But meanwhile, maybe we need to narrow in on telling him that it's a green 3 because we really need that one played. So then Ananda could give him a clue that says you have 4 or you have 3 green cards in your hand.
Oh, I have 2 green 3s.
Yeah, and then he knows. Yeah. So what am I forgetting here, guys? I think...
So the clues you can give each other are a limited resource.
Right.
That you can recover by discarding a card from your hand. The other big thing about this game is that while there are 3 ones of each color, there's only 1 5 of each color, and I believe 2 of each other number.
It's a very limited resource.
Very, very limited. So if you discard a 5, you cannot go up to 5 in that color anymore.
Right.
So you automatically kind of shoot yourself in the foot.
Yeah. And your goal is to get as high as you can in each color. A perfect game would be 25 points.
Yep.
So very rare. I don't think I've ever gotten that.
Well, and I appreciate that they have, like, a scoring rubric for it, too, like how well you did, because that really kind of helps encourage you. Like, yeah, you didn't do perfect, but you still did pretty good. Or you did, you know, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
You know? And you have, like, an idea of where you landed in the spectrum. Because if you don't do a perfect game, you didn't lose.
Right.
Just like, you know, in Galaxy Trucker, as long as you made money, you won.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's a good thing to have, especially in cooperative games, if there is, like, scales of success. It can kind of give people a little bit of a nudge of where they landed.
Yeah.
I like that personally.
Yeah. And I think this was one of the first games I really enjoyed where I started to think, oh, maybe I do like cooperative games. Because I kind of had this thing in my head, like, I don't know, if I had played Arkham Horror and like bigger cooperative games with really no communication limits. Mm. And I think I started to realize, oh, I like these small cooperative games that have limited communication, and you really have to make really interesting decisions with just one action you do on your turn.
Yeah.
You know, I either give a clue or play a card or discard a card. But the depth of it is really interesting.
Yeah.
With, yeah, what kind of clue do you give? Do you hint? Because all I tell you is, oh, you have a one in your hand, but you don't know if it's, should I play that one? Because
unless Ananda tells you you have a one in your hand, then you know if you should play it or not.
Ananda may have been doing some
you
extra
have a you have one hinting. One. You have one, one.
So the nice so I mean, okay, body language and tone aside, one of the cool things about the communication mechanic is there is actually a lot of information that you can infer.
Yeah.
Beyond just what's stated, because the context also matters a lot, you know, like the current state of the game. If we need a two and someone tells you you have one two, that's very different than if, you know, like all of the twos are out and someone says you have a two, or if, you know, everything is on, or there's no ones on the board and someone says you have a two. All of those mean something very different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is
and not giving someone a clue, yes, also means something.
Like, that's right.
Like Trevor had a terrible hand and we stopped giving him clues, yeah, so he would just discard his cards.
Yeah, yeah. It's super cool. It makes me think a little bit of The Crew, because obviously giving a clue in that is a similar thing of like, it's not just what information is conveyed, it's also, when did you do this? You know, why did you give us this information? There's a lot that you can infer. But it's way better in Hanabi because you can just do this all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas in The Crew, you can only do it once per game. Mm-hmm. So I really like that the limited communication is something you can engage with repeatedly in the game.
And regain it too. Almost like healing from the game, where you have the ability to kind of manipulate, like, hey, well, that's actually more of a choice in Hanabi. Mm-hmm. You can do it whenever, but if you do a five, then you've already kind of shot yourself in the foot. Or if you do a card that's already used, the other one that's in discard, but you don't know what it is.
If you discard one.
Then right, you if you discard, the, exactly. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, the other nice thing about that mechanic is if you have a hand that's useless,
mm-hmm,
this is also a very useful thing to learn, because now you can start discarding it and replenish everyone else's resources.
Right.
There's a use for every card.
Yep. And there's a second level of strategy, too, that I kind of had forgotten about, but remembered as we were playing, that even though I know what I could play on my turn, like, I know I can play this, too, because you've given me enough hints, but I could just save it and instead, like, give someone else a clue on my turn because I know they don't know anything about their
right
hand.
Yeah.
I'll be fine once when it comes back to me. So
I love that when you had literally you knew what every card in your hand was and you could just play them every turn if you wanted to.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a small memory aspect,
mm-hmm,
in that,
mm-hmm,
you need to remember what's in your hand, but it's not that hard. It's only three cards.
And you don't normally have all the information on all three cards anyway. So like you might have, I have a five, I have a one, I have two green cards.
Yeah. Yeah, and with four cards, it does sometimes get a little bit... With four players, you do play with four cards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. So the number of cards scales up with the number of players.
Yeah.
Because... What does it scale up?
Why does it? That's a good question. Maybe because it's easier to...
It takes longer between
your
turns.
Your clues are harder to... Well, no, you get the same amount of clue tokens.
Yeah, I think it's because you're going to have more cards in your hand linger, and there's going to be more turns in between each of your turns.
So it's easier for people to let you know what is in your hand exactly.
Yeah. I will say two-player is not great. Because you get in these weird loops of, like, I'm giving you a clue every time.
Yeah.
You play something.
Then I
have to... Yeah. So, definitely three, four, or five, I suppose.
And five is five cards?
Five is four cards.
Okay.
Yeah. But I probably was playing two-player wrong, because I always thought it was four cards in hand.
Oh.
From playing it with higher player counts.
Sure.
So, yeah, the memory thing... Yeah, it's actually, like, when you're first learning the game, pretty funny, I think. It creates some, like, funny moments where someone forgets what they had in their hand because enough happened in between turns, and then you can ask, you can ask the question, what do you know about your hand? And then they answer, and you have to keep a straight face as they tell you something completely wrong.
Well, but here's one interesting thing that sort of came up, because there was a turn where I think you had a five and I had a five, mm-hmm, and we both knew that we had fives. And in fact, I'd figured out exactly which five I had because I knew what was in Charlie's hand.
Because you had discarded a five. We had a five out, and you knew it was in Charlie's hand.
And I knew that people didn't seem to be encouraging me to play the five because no one would tell me what color it was, which let me deduce exactly which color it was. But then if you then ask me, what do you know about what's in your hand? If I say what I know about what's in my hand, then you can go and use that to deduce what's in Charlie's hand.
Right.
And what this reminds me of is, are you familiar with the blue-eyed Islander paradox?
Oh, we've talked about this.
Have we?
So imagine there's an island, right? And the Islanders either have blue or brown eyes. And there's a rule where if you learn that you have blue eyes, you have to leave the island. And so everyone's going about their day happy on the island. And then some outsider comes in and says, hey, by the way, I can see at least one person with blue eyes, and then leaves. Right. Now, so the interesting thing here is the outsider has not provided any new information. But as it turns out, the revelation that at least one person has blue eyes, which, assuming there's, people know this already, right?
Right.
But just by saying that, it leads to a sequence of events, because these islanders are perfectly logical.
Perfectly. Islanders are.
Really. Yes. That will lead to all of the blue-eyed islanders leaving the island. And the paradox basically relies on the concept of common knowledge, where something can be widely known but not necessarily commonly known. Common knowledge means you know it.
Tangent alert.
You know it, and you know that everybody else.
Where this is going.
Yeah, common knowledge is you know something, and you know that everybody else knows it too.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if no new information is being revealed, you can use that to make deductions. And I think Hanabi has some fun instances where common knowledge becomes a thing. Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes me want to see more games where common knowledge is
played with.
Yeah.
Where you come to an understanding, like you start out in a place where you don't know enough, and then you find some common knowledge.
Yeah. The whole idea is that there are facts that people know, but they don't know that other people know. Then once they learn that other people know those facts, that changes their behavior.
Hmm. So how, Trevor, you're holding a hand of Hanabi cards.
I don't know what they have.
Okay.
But both of us know what you have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just started holding them.
Oh, okay.
What kind of hint do you want?
Do I have anything useful?
No.
Perfect. That's my life.
Yeah. But that's what that reminded me of a bit.
Mm-hmm. How would you design a game up around that, do you think?
Common knowledge.
I'm not sure.
But widely known.
I mean, the blue-eyed Islander paradox makes me think of some form of logic game, probably, where similar to, the reason that it's similar to Hanabi is that in Hanabi you can see everybody else's cards but not your own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then learning what other people believe gives you information about what's on your cards, or can give you information. Mm-hmm. Because if they're not believing something that you think would be reasonable to believe, it might be that they have additional information from your card specifically that you don't.
Yeah.
So I think in general, I can't say exactly what it would look like, but a common knowledge, a game about playing with common knowledge would be something like that, where everybody else can see something about you that you can't.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you can,
Yeah. Would Blood on the Clock Tower have some of that, or similar to werewolf or things like that? Where
no, well, I think,
or you could you make a game like that?
Yes, actually, because I mean, Blood on the Clock Tower and Werewolf are not like that because it's the other way around, right? Everyone knows their own role, but they don't know anyone else's role. It would be like Blood on the Clock Tower if you could see everybody else's role, but not your own. So like you go around with your role on your head.
Yeah.
Isn't that a celebrity game or something? You're trying to figure out what celebrity you are?
There's like a game like that. I don't know if that's a social deduction game necessarily, but now that I'm talking about it, I am kind of curious what a social deduction game would look like if you can see.
Probably be pretty fun. Because I think that celebrity game is fun and funny, but it's not like the different celebrities tell you anything about what you have.
Right.
But if it was a numerical coordination game, but competitive.
Oh.
I would probably just go for a straight social deduction game. I don't know that I'd work in numerical coordination.
Sure.
Social coordination.
Well, yeah, but in the next episode, we'll have to talk about your game, though, that does use numbers.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. So, back to Hanabi, though.
All right, we should probably have a takeaway for this game, huh?
We've been on a lot of tangents in this series.
But thank you for hanging out with us.
I think for my takeaway, I'm just going to say that, you know, you can make a game that interacts with common knowledge by hiding people's own information from themselves, but not everyone else. And that I think that would be a cool direction for a game. So maybe I'll look into that.
Yeah.
I think my takeaway is how the clue system works and how giving someone a hint about their hand. You really still have to interpret what the hint means is the most fun part of the game. Because, and the fact that cards in your hand can go from very useful to suddenly not useful at all. Say someone else plays the same color one as you, and now your one is useless. So someone might have given you a hint that you had a one, and you have to figure out, is it because should I play this still or should I discard it? So the fact that, every game feels different too, because it's like we gave Ananda a hint that he had a five in his hand long ago, but then that whole pile was dead already. So
yeah,
so he had to discard it, sadly.
Yeah. Yeah, for my takeaway, I want to lean on that communication element. And I think with this style game, with, you know, these kind of numerical coordination games, having the communication be either a physical resource or just a restriction in general is really important. And how you go about that restriction, I really like how Hanabi handles it with it being a currency, like you're saying. But then you also can see other people's cards, which is very unique and a way of like them communicating what they have to you without knowing themselves what they have. And so you're able to kind of draw other deductions and things from those things, from those elements. I really like how they handle the communication in this game and that you don't get to know what you have, but you have a lot of knowledge of what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a combination of both of your takeaways.
Great.
Cool. As well. They do the lives thing as the mind does, right? Where if you mess up, you have so many mess ups and then it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a great way to encourage more risky behavior at first.
Yeah. Yeah, because you might think like, it's a game where we're trying to get a high score.
Right.
Just play until you lose, but there needed to be that other factor of you screw up and you lose a life. Because otherwise, I could see where maybe there's maybe a version where it was just like, we lost that card.
Mm-hmm.
It's out of the deck. But yeah, having a premature ending to the game is a good thing.
Your hands get, I don't know what happens with the bomb going off, but
yeah, this is it's kind of a dark scenario in fireworks.
Or the entire batch of fireworks all go off together at the same time, and that's not good because it happened all at once and it wasn't fun.
Look at you, Trevor, thinking about the theme here. there's nothing really else that I guess your fireworks are going higher and higher from one to five. So, and their colors
less intense to more intense. Yeah. You want to save the intense ones for the end.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, well, good job, Antoine Bauza. Cool game. So, until next time, unless anyone had final thoughts on Hanabi? No? Okay. Well, let's do our wrap-up episode next time on numerical coordination games.
Bum, bum, bum.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.